What the fuck are you telling me, Jill? Black fucking market organs? What the hell? Why didn't you tell me?
If I'd known, Montaigne, I would have. Don't get pissy.
Monty was going batshit. His tie was loose and his collar crumpled. He was working around the clock. It wasn't good for him. Then again, police work isn't, strictly speaking, good for anyone.
I had no idea organ heisting was part of it. I was looking for a supernatural explanation. It was the scalpel marks that clued me in.
Sullivan and Badger have been tracking a string of black market organ harvestings that end up leaving the donors dead with a goddamn 22 hole in their skull.
Huh. Maybe they're related?
Monty's office seemed too small to contain his rage. Not at me, thank God.
Christ.
He dropped into his chair, almost disappearing behind the flood of paper files and assorted other crap.
All right. Go talk to them. Look over their files. We'll pick up this Dr.
Krakowicz. Polish, I think.
Whatever the hell his name is. We'll pick him up. Though, if whoever this is decides to take out some more scumbags like Rocadero, I might throw a fucking parade.
For cleaning the streets of pregnant hookers, too?
God damn it. Everyone was forgetting the victims here. The girls that walked the streets. The girls who had been abandoned too many times already.
I'm sorry, Jill. You know it ain't that way.
Outside the door, Saul waited. Perry was in a limousine circling the block. I was alone in here with Montaigne, who was a good cop. And even more important, a friend. He'd never let me down. And Monty did care. Even the impossible cases where the perp was never found, he and his detective circled like a tongue circles a sore tooth, unable to forget.
I know it isn't. I'm just fucking frustrated. I'm sorry, Monty. Really.
You're getting punchy.
I think bitchy is the word you want to use.
When this is over, you want to take some time off? I guess we can keep everything under control for a little while. Maybe. But for now, just go out there and stop this shit, will you? I gotta go home to Margie one of these days. Okay?
Okay. I'll get this done ASAP, Monty. Because if I don't, and a rogue sorrow brings the nameless through with an evocation, all hell's going to break loose. And that's not even half of it. You want to know any more?
Christ, no. What you just told me is going to give me fucking nightmares. Get out of my office, get to work. Give Carp and Rosie something new to do, and Sullivan and Badger, too. I'll keep the press distracted as long as I can. Just make this shit stop.
Okay, Monty. You're good to work for, you know that?
Get the fuck out of here, Jill.
See ya.
I closed the door behind me. Saul leaned against a cubicle wall directly across from the door.
This is getting too big. We need help, not just human cops.
What you're not saying, I'm thinking too. And a hellbreed neither of us trusts. What are we supposed to do? Call in a bunch of wares to waste themselves on a suicide attack? No. We figure out how to take the Wendigo out on our own. There's gotta be a way.
What about this sorrow?
Good question. If Belise is telling the truth, she probably knows how to short-circuit whatever evocation this bitch is trying to perform. And if the Wendigo's involved, I just have to get a message to her that I'm willing to talk.
How are you going to do that?
Simple. Just drop a word in the right ear, and it'll get to her.
Which ear?
Relax, Saul. It's taken care of. Perry put the word out this morning. We're going to set Rosie and Carp to digging with the Badger and Sullivan, and then we're going to go have a little chat with this doctor. And after that, we're going to visit Hutch's bookstore and see what we can dig up on Wendigos.
The Badger was a short, round, motherly woman with a streak of white over her left temple, and Sullivan, a thin, tall, red-haired Irish with a penchant for cowboy hats. They were sometimes called Jack Spratt and Wife by the braver practitioners of cop humor, and put up with it estimably. They had reams of information on the organ trade in Santa Luz. Too much for me to absorb. The Badger, bless her forward-thinking little heart, had photocopies of the more interesting cases, as well as a few fact sheets. I read in the car while Saul drove, and Perry's limo cut a narrow black swath behind us. I wasn't sure I liked that albatross following us around, especially during the day. But the tightness of Saul's jaw warned me not to say anything about it. I wondered what deal he'd made with Perry. Swallowed the question. We made it to Kinkoa against light traffic, and Saul parked in the same alley as before. Perry's limo, in magnificent defiance of its own incongruity, idled, gleaming and black, across the street. I checked the sky. Sunlight, still. He made no appearance, and I wondered once again what he was.
Vulnerable to sunlight? Or just not showing himself? Playing a game?
This time, we didn't lie in wait and examine the building. Saul took the hermetically sealed door off the hinges, the deadbolt tearing free of softer metal.
Oh, Jesus God!
The reek of death and a loud, zoo-like odor drove me back a full 3 paces to the edge of the steps. Saul wrinkled his nose, glanced at me. He had his Sig Sauer drawn, pointed toward the door.
What the fuck?
Stinks. And a sealed door. I smell more than one.
How many?
I can't tell.
The Wendigo?
Oh, yeah. I smell it, too. But old. It hasn't been here for a day or two.
Jesus. Oh, all right. Call Montaigne. Tell him we've got a scene. I'm going in.
Jill!
Come on, Saul. I'm the hunter. There's a payphone on the corner, or there's a cell in Perry's limo if it comes to that. Now hurry up, so you can come back and cover me. Though I don't think the thing's here. I don't think anything's left alive in here.
Saul's jaw set, hard as concrete. Then he was gone. I waited until he was half a block away before I peeled the leather cuff off my right wrist one-handed.
Ugh.
Cool air hitting the scar sent a shiver down my spine. I stuffed the cuff in my pocket and closed my left hand around my secondary gun. Then I stepped forward into the miasma of death.
Breathe. Damn it, Jill, breathe. The smell will fade.
But I knew it wouldn't. The receptors in my nose might shut off, but the smell would work its way into my skin. And even deeper, into memory.
How many bodies? Let it only be one or two.
Even as I moved through the flickering fluorescent light of the perfectly normal waiting room, I knew it wouldn't be only one or two. No wonder the clinic hadn't been open. The air was stuffy, dead still. I peered behind the nurse's counter. A neat stack of files sat next to a keyboard, under a dead, dark monitor. I wanted to take a look, but rule one of sweeping a scene is give assistance to the living. Of course, I doubted there was anyone in here alive. Not with that smell. I pushed open the swinging door that should lead to patient rooms and the back hallway. And the odor of death belched out, enfolding me.
Ugh.
I peered into the hall, and my fingers loosened on the gun.
Dear God, how many of them are there? Arms? Legs? This is a lair. Or it was.
The smell of the creature was fading, but enough remained to make the intaglio of twisted, rotting limbs seem to move. Open mouths. Eyes torn from skulls, torsos cracked like nuts.
Oh, God. God in heaven.
The sight scored itself deeper behind my eyes, and the scar on my wrist pulsed, gruesomely warm and wet as if a rough-scaled tongue had licked it. I backed up a step. I ran into something soft and whirled with my gun outstretched, fingers locked around my wrist.
Just me, kiss. There is nothing living in this place.
God, he...
God is not here. Of all people, you should know that. Catholic, weren't you? A plaid-skirted schoolgirl.
I pulled against Perry's grasp. His fingers tightened, but I tore my hand away. My grasp firmed around the butt of the gun. I made for the front door as fast as I could.
Jillian, you do know that, right? God is a fiction. There is nothing godly about this.
Shut the fuck up, Perry.
They were stuffed everywhere. Bodies and bits of bodies, in varying stages of decomposition. There was not an inch of carpet that wasn't soaked with blood and fouler things. Maggots exploded from torn flesh. Noisome liquids ran. And the techs brought the remains out in bags much too small for a human corpse. There was only so much piecing together of individual corpses that could be done at the scene. The rest had to wait for the lab. The whole building was cordoned off, so at least we didn't have to worry about a crowd. This was a quiet part of town. Kinkoa was a limbo that only happens in cities. A long, seedy street zoned for both industrial and residential, and holding precious little but vacant buildings and the occasional professional office lingering from better days when it had been a thriving highway. Perry's limo sat sleek and black across the street in a parking lot, not idling, but simply sitting. Perry himself stood off to one side, watching the human hubbub while the sun went down. Most of the paramedics, cops, and forensic techs instinctively avoided him, as if he was a cold draft or a nasty smell. His hair glowed, and his suit was still immaculate. The almost worst had been finding the operating theater, scrubbed and glistening. There was a close, narrow back hall that gave onto a haphazard bay where they had most likely pulled the van in. A stack of styrofoam coolers, a supply of dry ice, scalpels, and clamps laid out with gleaming precision. Everything you needed to harvest organs. Especially if you weren't too concerned about the owners of those organs surviving the experience. The medical examiner's office was not going to be happy with this. What was even worse than the operating room were the fading marks of violence. The etheric strings of souls torn and violated as surely as the bodies had been. My blue eye could see those marks. Where a sorrow's adept had performed that most foul and tricky of feats. Eating a soul. Taking the psychic energy of death, harvesting it to fuel something unspeakable. An evocation of the nameless, powered by this kind of terrible agony and brutality, would tear a hole sky deep in the fabric of reality. We were looking at a psychic wound the people of this place would probably never recover from. And God help us all if the nameless was set loose. It would mean 3 7/10 years of indescribable corruption, agony, and degradation. A cancer eating its way into the heart of the world.
Not here, goddammit. Not in my city.
I sat on the curb, my head on my knees. The last failing vestiges of sunlight fell across my shoulders, edging with gold the weeds forcing up through cracked and failing sidewalk.
Since spring. God knows how many there are in there. Right under my goddamn nose, a Chaldean whore and a Wendigo. Some hunter I am.
Saul sat next to me. Close enough I could feel the heat of him. He didn't touch me, though. He knew enough to leave me alone, silently offering his presence while I suffered the worst wound any hunter could ever suffer. Guilt. The images were burned into the darkness behind my eyelids. A cavalcade of horrors. Hell reproduced in miniature.
God is not here. Of all people, you should know that.
Hey, Saul.
Rosie?
How is she?
Quiet. Taking it a little hard.
I brought some coffee. Jill? Want some coffee?
I don't want anything except to get the hell out of here. To get as far away as possible.
Get up, Jill. Get up and do your duty. You are a hunter. This is what you do.
I raised my head, slowly. Night was rising. Rosie's freckles stood out garishly against the paleness of almost shock. Her hair was pulled sleekly back, but she still looked tired and frazzled.
Here.
Thanks. I'm sorry, Rosie.
For what? Better we find these people now. We have a chance of identifying them, hopefully. You look like hell.
Thanks.
You're gonna be okay.
No. Not even close.
Fine. I sat up straight.
What do you want us to work on, Carp and me? We've been getting up to speed on this organ stuff with Badger and Sullivan.
You and Carp can process the scene and keep on the lookout for another one. Other than that, nothing. It's too goddamn dangerous to have you guys poking around. I don't want to lose either of you.
What are you gonna do?
Find the Sorrow's bitch responsible for this. Take her out and her entire happy crew of helpers. Kill them and leave them in their stinking gobbets somewhere. And curse their bones so that their souls find no rest in this world or the next.
Well, nice to know you have a plan. Anything else we can do?
Keep your heads down. One way or another, this is all going to be over soon. Either I'm going to kill them all, or you'll need to find a new hunter, and quick. Not to mention, you'll want to get as far away from this fucking city as possible.
That's reassuring.
It's not my job to be reassuring. You're a good cop, Rosie. You know that?
Coming from you, that means something. I'll go tell Carp the good news. You might want to sled away before he decides to corner you and tell you not to do anything stupid.
You're not going to tell me that?
He thinks you'll listen. I know better. Be careful. And you too, Tonto.
Perry reached us as Rosie stepped away. I noticed a glittering in his eye. It made him look far more like the hellbreed I was used to seeing inside the walls of the Monde Nuit. Perry.
Kiss.
Find Melisande Belisa. Bring her to me. Perry opened his mouth as if he was going to say something, then stopped, studying me intently. I was safe enough right now. If the Wendigo was going to attack me, it would have to find me first. Which wasn't a comforting thought. But we needed someone on our side who knew what this other Sara's bitch was up to. And Belisa, damn her eyes, is the only one I can think of. Besides, if she gives me any trouble, I'll have Saul and Perry hold her down while I take her spleen out the hard way. And I will enjoy every goddamn moment of it. I am not a nice person. I held Perry's gaze for a long, restless eternity. Then I folded my arms, the ruby at my throat beginning to vibrate. The scar, slumbering since I'd found the bodies, tingled. His aura tightened. The bruised sludge that marked him as Hellbreed. Funny. But nothing with an aura like his should be able to produce hellfire in the blue spectrum. What are you, Perry?
Melisande Belisa. Certainly, my dear. Anything for my kiss. It shouldn't take too long.
Good. I want her alive, Perry. But I want her frightened. Perry waved one hand above his shoulder, as if I was bothering him with trifles. Saul.
Right here.
I need you to go down into the barrio and find out what kills a Wendigo. Keep digging until you find something, then come back to me. Take the car. I won't need it.
Jill.
No. I need you to do this for me.
What are you going to do?
Some things.
What kind of things?
Things I don't want you to see me do, Saul. I love you. Please, Saul.
Try not to get into trouble. And give me your keys.
I dug in a pocket and handed them over. My eyes blurred, and I felt the final click that meant I was lifting off. Sliding away from the earth, into the space where there was no room for what I was feeling. The space that would hold me until it was safe to feel something again. I have had enough. My city. They are trying to do this to my city.
I'll come find you as soon as I know how to kill it. I promise.
You don't need to promise.
I'd like to, so you know I'm serious.
He turned and headed for the Impala. I decided to run for the alley that cut between an old abandoned grocery store and a newer but equally abandoned building that had been an auto parts supply store. I could cut over to 142nd and get a cab there. I had enough cash for anywhere I would need to go tonight. I didn't look back. I kept going. The flesh gallery was just starting to pulse with nightlife. Long legs and ragged fishnets under short skirts, the motion of hips back and forth, the glitter of eyes under mascara and thick eyeliner, cheap jewelry, and the ubiquitous jackets now that the wind had risen. Coming down off the mountains, the winter wind was cold, full of the smell of sage and stone. It whistled in the canyons between skyscrapers, and here on Lucado, it filled the night with knives. The girls were nervous, and I didn't blame them. I examine the street from a good vantage point on the roof of a tenement, pulling my tattered coat around me. I waited. I had stripped the cuff from my wrist, and the scar burned under the cold kiss of wind. The night came alive, colors and sounds curdling under the lash of preternatural attention, my mind open, still, receptive. I saw it as it turned the corner.
The Cadillac.
It slid like a stiletto through the shoals of tired girls, and some of them cast frightened glances at it as it passed. I leapt. I hit the ground, rolling to bleed momentum. Cold concrete, pebbles digging into my back. Then I was dashing through the shadows, just a flicker of motion in the darkness. By the time I reached the quiet little brownstone, he was already inside, and one of his muscle troop was on the front steps. The muscle, thick and heavy in a long coat with a bulge under his left arm where the gun was, never even saw me in the shadows. Then I was inside, and the other thug was at the end of the hall. He was a short, tubby man, powerfully built for all his lard, smelling of frijoles and grease, with the heatless scent of a killer on him, too. I pulled the strike at the last moment so as not to break his neck.
What the hell is this?
Diamond Ricky had a girl in there with him, a half-naked child with high brown breasts, who was rolling the top of a stocking down her thigh. I spared her less than half a thought. There was a low table with a mirrored tile fouled with cocaine holding down a fan of 20s, and a white leather couch. The ceiling held mirrors too, as well as the closet on the far wall. Electric light was soft and dim from 3 green and blue lava lamps on a glass shelf. The nightstand held a paper bag full of something illegal, judging by the smell, and a 9mm that would do him no good. The thick, musky green smell of pot filled the room, both old and new. Ricky was reclined on a bed, his hand inside the open fly of his trousers. I was on the bed in one leap, my left-hand finger sinking into his throat and the gun in my right hand rising up to lock onto the girl. Her face hadn't lost its baby fat yet. She was barely old enough to be walking to school by herself, let alone be in a room with a pimp.
Shut the fuck up!
The girl clutched a bit of feathers to her chest. Some kind of lingerie, probably Ricky's contribution to the fun and games. Her long, dark hair quivered, and the lipstick smeared on her lips made her mouth into a wet, dark hole.
Take the money!
I pointed the gun toward the table. The girl edged over and looked at Ricky, then jerked the money out from under the tile. The cocaine scattered on the tabletop.
Snow on glass planes.
I made a tiny motion with the gun toward the door.
Go out the back door, or you'll be shot. Go home, if you have a home. If you don't, check into a hotel. But if I see you on the street tonight, or if you tell anyone, I will find you.
It was an empty threat. I wouldn't have cared, but she believed it, and her eyes darted toward Ricky. I tightened my fingers in the pimp's throat. The girl scrambled for the door.
Ricky, now you and I are gonna have a little chat, cabrón. A very cozy little talk. You're gonna tell me about your playmates, and we are gonna have a lovely special moment right here on your bed. Bet you like that, don't you?
I loosened up a little on his throat.
Now, your meeting with Jonte and the boys. Who else was there, and what was said? Take it from the top.
Pimps are predictable creatures. They have their routines and their habits, and the fact that most of them are into petty drug dealing doesn't change that. If a pimp gets picked up, his girls bail him out, usually with the help of his lieutenant. But if a pimp ends up dead, with his second and his muscle crippled, the girls free fall for a while. The drugs come from other dealers, some of whom are weak and move into the power vacuum to become pimps. Or they come from new pimps that rise like maggots from a corpse to take the place of the old one. I wish it was harder for them. God, do I wish it was harder.
Wish in one hand, Kismet, spit in the other. See which fills up first.
I followed the chain up, each pimp telling me a little more, and saved Jonte for last. He was a big, broad, soft-in-the-middle black man with a wide, genial smile and two front teeth cased in gold, until he'd met me. 11 pimps, each of whom had been at the meeting with Rocadero, who was dead probably because the red-headed sorrow didn't need him anymore. The pimps being alive either meant that they weren't important, or that she still needed them to supply something, whether it be flesh or cash. It was from Jonte that I got the most important piece of news. It would take a stronger man than a pimp not to give up everything he knows when a hellbreed strong fist flexes and a testicle pops like a grape. At heart, the men who make their living like that are cowards. It's why they engage in the mind fucks instead of getting real jobs. What they don't realize is that the mind fucks eat them alive, too.
Now's not a time for philosophy.
I stood over the boneless body of the big man slumped to the tile floor, contemplating his apartment. Jonte had a nice place, for all that I'd busted up a good deal of it. He'd also had some half-decent help. I'd taken 4 men with assault rifles, 3 with handguns, and another 2 that apparently had little use other than as hangers-on. They were only human, all of them. And I'd found Jonte gibbering with fear in his kitchen, crouched under the counter and trying to load a .38 revolver. Whether for himself or me, I wouldn't want to guess. I was bleeding down one side of my face, and there was a fresh bloody hole in the left thigh of my pants, closing rapidly.
Now is the time for showing these fucks what happens when you mess with my city. I've had enough. I have so had enough of this.
The scar on my wrist pricked wetly, a thick welter of heat spilling up my arm. Fresh, cold wind poured in through the busted French door, glass broken in sharp slivers in the tide of sticky blood that washed across the tiles. I closed my eyes as pieces fell into place. Taken separately, the pimps hadn't known much, but putting all the pieces together gave me a picture, just like a jigsaw. Even if you don't have all the pieces, you can make a guess if you have enough of them. And now I knew, too, where the red-headed sorrow had her little bolt hole. It was a stroke of genius. One I admired coldly while I considered how to break in and kill her. I tilted my head. The sound was coming from downstairs, in the basement. If I'd been wearing my cuff, I probably wouldn't have heard it. I had both guns out. I turned into the entry hall, lifting both guns. There was a door at the end, probably going down to the basement and locked with a shiny brand new padlock. And behind it was whatever was making those sounds.
Hamlin's town in Brunswick, by famous Hanover City. Vermin, 'twas a pity.
The poem rang inside my head with dark glee.
Focus, Jill. What the fuck is that?
I holstered my right-hand gun and closed my fingers around the padlock. I shut my eyes, drawing on the scar. I drew my gun again. It pays to be careful.
Open the door and come out!
I kept the guns level. Whoever was behind the door sounded harmless, but there was simply no telling, and I was here without backup.
God damn it! Come out right fucking now or I will come in there shooting!
The naked human woman that emerged from the basement squinted blindly in the light. She carried a long splinter of wood that looked utterly useless as a weapon. We faced each other over the expanse of tiled floor. She had wide, dark eyes and close-cropped dark hair, and she couldn't have been more than 18. Another girl, this one just as naked and quite obviously just as young or younger, stepped out into the light, shading her eyes as if she were standing in the sun.
Are you one of them? If you are, goddammit, I'll kill you!
What the fuck?
Who are you?
I just killed Jonte. What the hell were you doing in the basement?
What? You think we wanted to be locked up there in the dark?
The girl lifted the splinter of wood, and I remembered I was holding both guns on her. I lowered them slowly. A horrible idea began forming under the surface of my conscious mind.
Are any of you pregnant?
The suspicion she eyed me with would have been insulting if I hadn't suspected that I'd stumbled across the reason why Jonte had been left alive by the red-headed sorrow. 3 days to the invocation of the nameless, and a clutch of young girls held here in a pimp's house, fed and trammeled like prized rabbits. I decided this would be a good time to holster my guns.
I just killed the pimp who owns this house. Let's call 911 and find you lady some clothes.
You're her. You're the one who bought us.
I don't buy people, nor do I sell them.
I must have been wearing my mad face, because the girl's eyes widened. She dropped the splinter to the floor. The hair on the back of my neck stood straight up. The sound echoed in my hellbreed sensitive ears, moving to the forefront, impossible to ignore.
Holy fuck.
I focused as hard as I could past the girls. I heard individual heartbeats. There had to be at least 20 of them in there. Defenseless. Judging by the smell wafting from the door, sanitation in the basement hadn't been as good as one could wish. But the hearts were healthy and strong, so they had probably been fed.
Just the thing to fuel your evocation of a hungry elder god with.
All of you can come out! You're safe! I turned my attention back to the two women in the foyer. The girl behind the leader had folded her arms over her bare breasts defensively. I saw more spilling out. None of them a day over 20, if I guessed correctly. They clustered behind the dark-haired girl, who was obviously the leader, and I saw a glint in her eyes I recognized from a lifetime ago and miles away. She wasn't ready to die yet, and she was one tough cookie.
Listen to me. Jonte's got cars. The keys are hanging in the kitchen. Be careful, there's broken glass. Get the fuck out of here. All hell's gonna break loose.
Where should we go?
Get downtown. I think he's got a Humvee in there. Get downtown and get to the police station. Tell them Kismet sent you. Got it? K-I-S-M-E-T.
Kismet. Okay. Show us to the car. I've got my learner's permit. I'll drive.
What's your name?
Hope. Hope Melendez.
Hope. I'm Jill. Come on.
Hope moved forward, seemingly unself-conscious of the fact that she was completely unclothed. But I saw the bruises on her thighs, and the way she held herself, as if she couldn't stand to have even the air touch her.
Shit. Fucking shit. I've got to get them to a car or two. Christ, I hope more of them know how to drive. Then I've got to hold the Wendigo until they can get away.
Okay, let's move it, girls, this way! And hurry up! I had a good guess where the garage was, and Jonte was known for his car collection.
Three-car garage. Impressive.
I found the switches for the garage doors quickly. Finding the keys was no problem either. There was a neat pegboard with all the keys we could ever want.
They kept us down there in chicken wire cages. I worked on tearing a hole through the wire in one.
Hope held up her left hand. Her fingertips were mashed and bleeding.
We heard the gunshots. Figured either we were next or we were going to be left down there in the dark. So I broke open my cage. They told us we'd been bought by a woman, and that she was coming to take us away.
Oh, closer. It's getting closer.
Move it, girls! I didn't have time to offer Hope any comfort. I directed them into two cars, a black Humvee and a silver Escalade. Jonte had certainly liked pimp rides. Seatbelts were a problem, but if it was a choice between seatbelts and getting them out of here, I'd pick getting them out. They were packed like sardines. Hope clambered into the driver's seat in the Humvee. Her second in command, a plump blonde girl with wide blue eyes and bruised, blood-crusted thighs, was already strapped into the driver's seat of the Escalade.
Hey, Zeus! This thing is big!
Go easy on the brake. If you get pulled over, it's okay. Tell them my name and they'll take care of you. And for God's sake, be careful. It might help if everyone in there prays. Turn the heater up as soon as you can. You don't want anyone going into shock. Now go! For fuck's sake, go! There's no time!
The Humvee pulled out slowly, with the Escalade following. They moved torturously slow as they slid down the circular driveway.
Oh, please, please.
I saw them make the turn out onto the street, so goddamn slowly. The Wendigo almost on top of us by now and coming from the north.
Which doesn't make much sense if she's hiding out where I think she is. Where Jonte told me he had taken a few bitches.
It didn't matter. I wondered if it had slipped its leash and come hunting on its own, or if the red-headed sorrow had let it loose in another part of town. My skin crawled like it wanted to run away from both me and the creature. I wanted to examine where they'd held the women, but it was enough to know that they were supposed to be kept alive and relatively unharmed except for rape. Opening up a door in the ether and bringing a Chaldean demon through requires a massive effort, and that effort could be fueled by harvested death. But something simpler was fresh death, done ritualistically. Traders sacrificed snakes, rabbits, dogs, horses, goats, anything they could catch and get rid of the husk afterward. But to bring through the nameless, not even the death harvested from organ theft would do. And to bring him through and bribe him into doing something nice for a renegade sorrow would take even more. It made sense. Appalling, wasteful, mad sense. But still, it was a pattern. It was a workable theory. Now I just had to stay alive long enough to figure out the rest of it and stop it. Brooding wouldn't help. And the slight nasty thought that the renegade sorrow might have killed Jonte herself for allowing his boys to play with her sacrifices was amusing and gratifying, but wouldn't help me now. I turned around, hitting the button to close the garage doors. I ducked underneath and settled across the driveway. Decide which way to go, Kiss. Move with a plan. For Christ's sake, don't do anything stupid. Taking off like a rabbit. This thing is fast. It's deadly. And you've got your scar, your whip, your guns, your knives. All of which are fucking useless if it gets too close. And you've got your teeny little noggin, which has to save you now. This was a bad part of town to be trapped in. But if I cut across the old highway and ran for a bit, I would be at the edge of the barrio's dark, night-pulsing adobe warren. I knew that warren. Knew some good hiding spots and shortcuts. Nightwind brought the first threads of the Wendigo's scent, a noxious stink that raised the hairs on the back of my neck. Goose flesh prickled up under my skin.
That thing almost fucking killed you. You have no staff now, goddammit, and it's fast. It's too goddamn fast.
I told the rabbit panicking part of myself to shut up, reached the street, and picked up the pace. A sour taste of fear on my tongue. I paced myself and drew on the cold, pulsing scar on my wrist as hard as I could. But even though I had the benefit of Hellbreed Bargain's strength, I was seriously flagging by the time I reached Merced Street, heading for Plaza Centra. The PC isn't really a plaza. It's a gutted five-story building full of tiny shops, botanicas, and bodegas, with a vast central well thronged with people at any time of the day or night. It takes up a whole city block, and was once a train station before the barrio reached in from the slum edge of town and took it captive. It also had the biggest concentration of wares in the city. Something that smelled this bad and was obviously intent on mayhem was likely to attract some notice. And while I didn't like the thought of luring the Wendigo right through a heavily populated area and risking some casualties, I also didn't like the thought of meeting my death on a lonely street where there was no bloody cover. Wares means smell, and smell was likely how this thing was tracking me. If I could confuse it, maybe I could escape. These considerations flashed through my mind as I turned down Merced and saw the lights of Plaza Central in the distance, glimmering like fool's gold. My boots pounded the pavement, the scar no longer cold on my wrist, but hot. So hot I expected it to steam in the chill night air. It poured etheric force into me, and I spent it recklessly. Speed was imperative, since I could feel the thing behind me, and whenever the wind shifted, I could smell it too. How it was tracking me through wind shift, I didn't want to know.
I don't even want to guess. At this point, I'll settle for just keeping my miserable life.
If the normal humans sensed me at all, it was only as a cold draft. A flash out of the corner of the eye. Something not quite right, but gone before they could take a second look. The thing was gaggingly close.
I slowed too much. No alley in sight. No way to jag left or right.
A massive impact smashed through me as the thing collided with its prey and sent me flying. I'd gone through a window and fetched up against shelving but fell over. The sudden smell of smashed vegetables all around me. I lay for a moment, lungs burning and heaving, legs and arms too drained to move, scar a burning cicatrice on my wrist.
Oh, God, let it be quick. If it has to take me, let it be quick. Saul. Oh, Saul. Oh, God, Saul.
Get up! Jesus Christ, Jill, get up!
Damn! Prayer answered.
I levered myself up. The creature was a massive ball of hunger and gagging stench, suddenly freezing the air inside the bodega. Saul transformed. Flame suddenly belched out from where Saul stood, hitting the thing in the side. Fire, bright crimson-orange, speared through the night. More vital, more impossibly real than regular fire or hellfire. Heat scorched the air so badly it stripped the hair back from my face. A holocaust of flame. More wares! I identified the shaman's voice as it lifted in the high, keening screech of were magics. Those bloody, animalistic, and strangely pure works of sorcery that are their peculiar heritage. Saul moved with fluid grace as the shining wand he held glittered with heat. The cancerous thing tried to bat Saul away. But Saul was somehow not there as the creature swiped with its bloody claws. Steam billowed as the thing Saul held broke the soul-devouring cold of the creature. The glowing thing in his hand, a long, slim wand, struck. The creature toppled into the shelves. Saul ducked aside as the Wendigo clawed for him. He kicked it in the head. A perfectly placed savate blow, using the kick to propel his body back and up, landing gracefully. The slim shape, burning white hot in Saul's hand, seemed to score through my eyes as it swung towards the beast. Then he plunged it into the creature. The air abruptly chilled, became the normal cold of a Santa Luz winter night. Steam and vapor drifted in the air. I was suddenly aware of my legs, strained and unhappy, making their displeasure known. My ribs, almost pulled loose by the demands placed on them. The scar pulsing obscenely against the inside of my wrist, as if Perry was kissing my arm again and again. Veils of mist in the air parted. Saul stood over the shattered body of the Wendigo. He tossed the arrowhead with its cargo of leather, feather, and hair onto the mess. Now that it was dead, it was a twisted humanoid figure, running wetly with icy gray fur and long bits of different colors, where its victim's scalps had been plastered to its mottled hide. Its face was tipped up, the eyes collapsing into runnels of foulness, its lipless mouth open in a silent, blasphemous scream, and its claws, obsidian-tipped and deadly, lay clenched against the linoleum of a devastated grocery store. It looked strangely small now, its face like a wizened, ugly child's, despite its frozen, rotted nose and non-existent lips. Its genitals were pendulous and black with frostbite, and around its neck was a thin silver chain, winking in the light, squirming with unhealthy black Chaldean sorcery. The chain was broken about a foot below its jaw. Shoved through its heart was a spike of glossy black obsidian-like material. It had been white hot just moments before. The hair of cougar form had melted from Saul. He stood straight and in profile, staring down at the defeated creature, his lips moving silently with the prayer spoken when wares come across death from bad luck or humanity. A forgiving of the spirit, in the midst of clear red rage. The wares crowded in through the window. I saw several different types. A Kentari, tossing his long silvery mane. A were spider whose face was gray and haunted under her mop of silken hair. Another werecat. There were others, but then, in the back of the crowd, I saw a pair of familiar blue eyes. A sheen of pale hair.
Perry, has he found Belisa?
At the moment, I didn't care. I closed my eyes.
Oh, Saul. Saul. Thank God for you. Thank God.
Oh. I collapsed on the couch in the warehouse living room.
I have never been so glad to see my own four walls.
I kept a wary eye on Belisa as she moved to perch on a chair opposite, glaring at me through her good eye while she clasped a pack of ice to the other side of her face. When she wasn't avidly peering at the interior and the furnishings, that was.
Storing up little bits of deduction to mindfuck me with later, no doubt.
Perry stood slightly behind her. He was immaculate. Gray suit. The first two buttons of his crisp white dress shirt undone. His shoes shined to perfection. He looked very satisfied with himself in his bland, blonde sort of way. Belisa's blue silk shirt was crumpled, her slippers battered. It had probably been a hell of a fight, but for tangling with Perry, she was strangely unharmed. I wondered if it was because I'd threatened him.
Not likely.
Saul had gone straight for the kitchen.
Anyone who wants whiskey better speak up now.
God, yes!
If you have anything decent, I'll take it.
Perry's eyes rested on me, under the leather cuff. The scar ran with rancid flame, trailers of heat sliding up my arm, smoky desire sliding through the map of my veins as if he was touching me, running his fingers up the inside of my elbow. I didn't look away, but I did clamp down on my self-control. I was vulnerable now, exhausted after expending so much power. And anytime human animals get close to death, sex is the easiest thing to tempt them with afterward. Belisa? Whiskey?
That would be nice.
That would be nice what?
I saw the blood drain from Belisa's face. She looked terrified, and I couldn't blame her.
That would be nice. Mistress.
Mistress? The term for a bitch queen. A sorrow higher in status than herself. What has Perry done to her?
Abruptly, I felt sick all the way down into my stomach. Perry had found her and brought her. And from the looks of it, she'd resisted. And now he was rubbing it in, for her benefit, and also for mine. Just to drive home that I owed him for bringing her in.
Christ. Well, you knew what he was when you struck the bargain, Jill. Don't pretend otherwise.
Drinks all around, Saul!
The two cars full of naked women had made it to the police station. Montaigne had left a message on my answering machine, alternately swearing at me and thanking me, then swearing at me again. I'd sort it out later. Right now, I had other things to worry about. A few clipped sentences in the Impala, with Perry's limo right behind, had laid out the chain of events for me. Saul had gone into the barrio and poked around, not finding much of anything until Perry showed up with Melisande Belisa in tow and a long, thin, iron-bound case. The firestrike spear Father Guillermo knew was hidden under the altar in the seminary's main chapel, a secret kept by Sacred Grace since its inception. Perry swore whatever was inside should kill the Wendigo. The catch? He hadn't actually opened the case yet. Both of them had felt my wild plunge into the barrio. Saul had left Perry to corral the bruised and beaten sorrow, and set off as fast as he could to find me and either kill the thing chasing me or buy me enough time to escape. He didn't want to talk about killing it. And he didn't want to talk about how the spear had burned his palms. Saul handed out glasses half full of amber liquid to each of us. Then he took his own seat, settling in on the opposite end of the couch from me. I wished I could cuddle up next to him, feel his heat. But he was still angry, the musky fume of fury hanging on him. He was wound tighter than a clock spring. I knew enough to leave him to himself right now. Besides, there was this red-head bitch of a sorrow to catch.
So Rourke lied. It wasn't St. Anthony's spear. I knew there wasn't such an artifact.
Guy didn't want to lie to you, but he'd taken an oath to keep the secret. I wonder what else they're hiding in there.
So you were looking for the spear too, Melisande. And your brother.
The plan was simple. We were to find the spear, kill the creature, and bring back Inez Germain. Use her to buy our way back into the good graces of our house. It was my inattention that allowed my brother to escape, and we were both due for punishment and liquidation once we were returned, unless we achieved something extraordinary. Something that could be legitimately seen as needing an escape as part of the plan. I visited him, explained the plan. He was to bring me the fire strike once he found where it was hidden. The new blasphemy priests hid it well, and we were running out of time. When I visited him, he had still not located the spear,
and our house sent the chaser for my brother, and...
And I got involved. So you decided a little mind-fucking was in order. I should kill her right now. God damn it, she killed Mikhail and she's sitting on my goddamn couch! In his house! The house he gave to me! God damn it!
I know you have reason to hate me. You've killed my brother. Tit for tat. We're even. Are you happy? We have less than a day before the evocation of the Nameless will alter the balance of power in every Sorrow's house in the world. Inez isn't just playing in your little city, Hunter. She will be a new Queen Mother above even the Grandmothers, and we will—
Wait just one goddamn second. Less than a day? But the end of the cycle isn't until—
It's tomorrow. Your calculations are off. They usually are, when you add the Gregorian calendar to the mix. We are doomed. All of us. Doomed.
Oh, for Christ's sake. I'm not gonna give up yet. When exactly does the cycle end? Tomorrow, when?
At 1:15 p.m. and 13 seconds.
Belisa eased the ice away from her face and took a gulp of the whiskey. She looked as dejected as it was possible for a Sorrow to look. But her black eyes were oddly empty, as if they were painted on. Perry was crackling with awareness. He looked ready to leap on Belisa if she so much as twitched. I found that comforting. But still, seeing her flinch away from him rubbed me the wrong way. Hard. 1 in the afternoon. Will freeing the human sacrifices help stop it?
For an evocation of this nature, she would keep them close at hand. The ones you freed were probably decoys or only to reward her human tools. You said they had been used.
Used? What a pretty little euphemism. They were raped, probably repeatedly.
And several of the victims were pregnant?
I nodded.
Then it's simple. The harvested fetal tissue is probably to provide a base matrix for the unnamed's entrance and physicality. She's going to create a Vacherak, an avatar. The other organs went for cash to build her new house, and still others went to feed the creature, which was insurance, I would guess. The chain around its neck carried a powerful control spell. I wonder if she created it herself.
I don't know, and I don't care. Why dump the bodies?
Probably because she had run out of places to hide them. And also, every place where a victim of this evocation lay slain would become a node point when she succeeds in bringing the unnamed through.
A node point? Of course! So the Avatar could have ready-made tap lines into the ambient energy of the city, draining it like an orange, which would widen the psychic scar in the ether and give it a hell of a lot of power.
Very good. I begin to see why your file is red-flagged.
Red-flagged? Actually, no, forget it. I don't want to know. So why did this bitch pick my city, huh?
You allow no house here. No house, no scrutiny by other Sorrows who might discover her plans.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
I can get almost everywhere in this city ready in a few hours.
And there are Hellbreed who can be coerced.
Well, would you look at that. Even Perry's scared. Not enough time. And once this is dealt with, there'd be a free-for-all I'd have to sort out. Oh, tired. I need a vacation. God, how many other graves are out there? And other bodies. Dear God. Why a Wendigo?
I suspect she came across it in her travels and thought it could be useful. She was in the Alps, and there have been stories. Chucharak.
What is a Chucharak, anyway?
It's house slang, not the ceremonial shorthand garbage, you know. It means, oh well, the best translation is, oh fuck. Or something of that nature. It depends on inflection.
Well, one mystery solved.
For a moment, I was tempted to just curl up on the couch and go to sleep. Just let whatever was going to happen, happen. The animal inside me just wanted to bury itself in a hole and sleep off the shakes and unsteadiness that came from almost dying.
Cover me with thy shield, and with my sword may thy righteousness be brought to earth, to keep thy children safe. Let me be the defense of the weak and the protector of the innocent. The writer of wrongs and the giver of charity, in thy name and with thy blessing, I go forth to cleanse the night. That is what you swore, that is what you prayed, and that is what you will do, Melia.
I gathered myself. When I opened my eyes, I found Perry and Belisa staring at me. Black eyes and blue, waiting avidly. For what?
It was in Perry's interest to keep me alive. At least, until he got tired of my resistance. And Belisa? If she could get me to distract this Inez bitch for long enough, she might have a shot at stepping into her shoes. I rolled my head along the back of the couch. Looked at Saul. He was staring into his glass. The musky smell of anger draining away.
Look at me, Saul. Please. Let me know what you're thinking.
He might even have heard the thought, because he glanced at me, his mouth pulled tight in resignation. No, he wasn't happy at all, but he said nothing, merely giving the slight head shake that meant he would wait until we were alone. I made up my mind. All right. Perry, you can take the sorrow back to the Monday and wait for me. If all hell breaks loose...
No.
Excuse me? Last time I looked, Perry, you weren't the one in charge here.
I brought you the sorrow. You promised to stay in my sight for the duration.
I didn't...
The creature's dead. Very well. Very good. But you are my investment, dear Kiss. And I am not about to let another little viper such as this one interfere with my very interesting plans for your education. That wouldn't be very wise of me, would it?
Cut the crap. You want to go along? Why should I let you wander into a fire zone where I'll have to split my focus between worrying about what's in front of me and worrying about you slipping a knife into my back?
There are more enjoyable things to do than slip a knife between your ribs, my dear Kiss. Now, just tell us where the icky little sorrow's hidey-hole is, and we'll finish this matter and turn our attention to other things. Like what I should do to teach Ms. Belisa here some manners. We have a room at the Monde, specially reserved for...
I leapt across the coffee table, shot forward, and ended up with my feet between Belisa's, the gun pressed to Perry's forehead.
Your services are no longer necessary, Pericles.
Put the gun down, Kismet.
You will not take a woman into that room at the Monde Nuit if I can prevent it. I have had enough of seeing women raped tonight. Get out of my house.
I am losing patience with you, Jillian. Or should I call you Judith? Didn't you prefer the...
Jill!
Perry fell, dropped like a stone. Blood gouted. So much thick, black blood.
No more. No more women raped. No more mind-fucking. No more of it. No goddamn more. I can take no fucking more. And if it takes killing Perry and slaughtering a house full of sorrows and an elder god too, I'll do it. It's just that motherfucking simple.
My hand dropped. I looked down at Belisa, whose head was bowed. Her shoulders were shaking under the blue silk.
Don't worry. I fixed it. I stopped him. He won't hurt you now.
Suddenly, the voice of rationality popped up.
This is a sorrow! The one who killed my teacher! What the hell am I doing protecting her? Oh, but she's still a woman. And no woman deserves Perry, goddammit! Or gang rape by Hellbreed. Saul, go get the car warmed up.
Jill!
Just do it!
Saul rose to his feet, casting one last glance at Perry. Then he was gone. I stepped back from the sorrow who hunched in the chair, her hair falling forward over her face. The smell of rotting blood cooking in a gun barrel painted the air. My hands were shaking.
Point blank. You shot him point blank. Hope that's enough. Pray that's enough.
Belisa. Melisande.
God damn it, get up! Let's go! We've got a world to save, you Chaldean bitch!
Her face tipped up, her black eyes meeting mine. Tears rolled down her cheeks. She was having a hell of a good time. Suddenly, her hand stabbed forward, a broken glass ampule in it spewing something that smelled oddly sweet. My body sagged, not hitting the floor because of her slim iron arms around my waist. Her fingers were at my throat. She tore the ruby away from my neck and tossed it.